Hello, this is Gregory Novak. This is The Cunning of Geist, episode 69. Welcome back. The purpose of this podcast is to explore philosophy, psychology, and science with an emphasis on the great 19th century philosopher George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel. In this episode, I'm going to be discussing once again artificial intelligence, AI for short, and particularly in light of recent developments surrounding the new ChatGPT software. This program has made the news lately for its conversational style and the speed with which it presents answers to questions. Many are claiming that this is a giant leap forward in terms of replicating human thought and may even be the initial beginning of a sentient computer, one with actual consciousness. Now, I did an episode almost a year ago on computers and artificial intelligence. That was episode 55. However, that episode was more of an introduction to the subject, and this was before all the talk about ChatGPT. In that episode, I spent time covering the computer revolution and the philosophical issues on whether a computer can truly be alive in the same sense as a human. I ended up being skeptical that a machine would ever be able to come alive, so to speak. But now we have seemingly developed a new tool, which many claim is a giant leap forward in artificial intelligence. In fact, it has many people concerned that we might want to put the brakes on any further development of it. It appears to be able to reprogram itself, and some say have a life of its own, if you can call that a life, and I know that's a very big if. Now, there's an active debate going on in the media currently among developers, scientists, and philosophers as to just what this represents or could represent in the future. There seems to be two camps. One camp is that bottom line, it is just a bunch of algorithms and only does what it is programmed to do. The other camp believes that they have seen things in AI that go beyond a traditional computer. Some believe that the machine is actually showing signs of thinking on its own. So this is what I'm going to be covering in the current episode. I must say that in preparing for this episode, it just seemed like I was getting bombarded with opinions on this subject almost nonstop right up till the time I started recording in the news and in social media. However, let's back up. First, just what is ChatGPT? It is a software program produced by a company called OpenAI. In fact, you can go to openai.com to read about the company, and you can even try ChatGPT for yourself. I did try it out at the website, and I'll tell you what I found in a minute. The program interacts with a questionnaire in a conversational way. And according to the website, the dialogue format makes it possible for ChatGPT to answer follow-up questions, admit mistakes, challenge incorrect assumptions, and reject inappropriate requests. Many scholars and reporters have been busy feeding it questions, such as how will you take over the world and things like that. And there's been somewhat of a media frenzy regarding it. Many are predicting that ChatGPT has the potential to disrupt society as the internet did in the 1990s. Now, there are other programs being developed besides ChatGPT. Google parent Alphabet has purchased a company called DeepMind and is investing heavily in it. Tesla CEO Elon Musk has stated that Google and DeepMind now have about 3/4 of all the AI talent in the world working for them. Now, what is striking is the reaction to ChatGPT and these other efforts in all quarters of the media and academia. Some claim it will replace up to 90% of all jobs. Others predict something far worse that will actually take over the world, as in the Terminator movies. For example, one fear article I found regarding ChatGPT claimed AI could cause a nuclear catastrophe. In a survey conducted by Stanford University, 1/3 of all AI researchers claimed that AI could cause a nuclear catastrophe by accident. And this was just through computer error, not a human interfacing with the artificial intelligence, with perhaps bad intentions. Elon Musk has also stated his concern that so much talent is at Google and that they appear not to be as concerned as much about safety as the good of humanity, but they're more concerned about profit than what this can do for humanity. He said in a tweet, ChatGPT is scary good. We are not far from dangerously strong AI, end quote. In a television interview just last night, he said that we will need to be able to pull the plug if something goes wrong. Musk also claimed that he had a discussion with Larry Page, the founder of Google, some time ago, and Page believed that a computer with consciousness must be considered to be alive and never shut down, just like any other life. But we may need to have an on-off switch, and I'll be getting into this. This is obviously reminiscent of the famous scene in the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey, where Dave the astronaut dismantles Hal the computer who has gone mad. Sundar Pichai, CEO of Google parent Alphabet, said just this past Sunday on the 60 Minutes television show that AI could be more profound than fire and electricity. Wow, that is some statement. What a time to be alive. And in the same interview, Pichai said that we need to begin a conversation about what role AI should play in our lives. It is interesting that Musk is bringing up the term strong artificial intelligence in the quote I just read. There are two levels of artificial intelligence that are recognized in the field, weak and strong. Strong AI, or artificial general intelligence, posits a program that would be sentient. In other words, it would be self-conscious. It would recognize itself as its own being. Where weak AI just performs thinking-type tasks without the element of self-consciousness. Strong AI would be indistinguishable from the human mind, like a child. It may have to be taught things, but eventually it could learn on its own. Now, at this point, strong AI is only theoretical. Some believe it is only a matter of time, however, before strong AI is achieved, and others believe it'll never be accomplished. I personally believe that we will be able to produce a machine that can achieve some 90% or so of the human capacity for intellect and reasoning, but we will never close the gap, never. And this is what I plan to explain in this episode, my reasoning for this. First, how would you know if a computer is sentient? Well, a common way to determine the intelligence of a computer model is the so-called Turing test, named by Alan Turing in 1950. He was the inventor of one of the first functional computers during World War II. The test is essentially how well the computer could imitate a real person. For example, say there were two doors in front of you, and behind one door was a live human being, and behind the other door was a computer. You could ask questions of both, and each would respond with a typed-out response. The question is, can the programming of the computer ever reach the point where it is indistinguishable from the human, that you can't tell which is the human and which is the computer? If that point is ever reached, then some say true artificial intelligence would have been created. But again, if this is indistinguishable from a human, does that mean it is alive itself? No, I do not believe it does. To me, this is just an example of weak AI doing logical tasks, and the Turing test itself is not proof of a living, sentient computer. Some believe the ChatGPT has now passed that Turing test, and it may just have done that. Let's examine a real-world example here regarding Hegel. I logged on to the ChatGPT site and asked it the following question. What is the Hegelian dialectic? I will not read you the response, but first, pretend you are an undergraduate philosophy professor and you were teaching a class on German idealism, and you asked the same question to your class and asked them to provide a brief essay on it, saying no more than 250 words. From what I'm about to read, could you tell whether it was from a real-life student or the ChatGPT program? Again, the question is, what is the Hegelian dialectic? And here is the response, quote, "The Hegelian dialectic is a philosophical concept developed by German philosopher George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel in the early 19th century. It is a method of reasoning that involves the development of ideas through a process of contradiction and reconciliation. According to Hegel, ideas or concepts are not static, but are in a constant state of flux, evolving and developing over time. This development occurs through the interaction of opposing forces or ideas, which he calls the thesis and antithesis. The conflict between these opposing forces leads to a synthesis, which is a new and higher level of understanding that incorporates the positive aspects of both the thesis and antithesis. Hegel believed that this dialectical process was fundamental to human history and the progress of ideas. He saw history as a continuous process of development, with each stage marked by a conflict between opposing forces and the eventual emergence of a new and higher level of understanding. The Hegelian dialectic has had a profound impact on philosophy, particularly in the areas of political theory and social philosophy. It has been used to analyze social and political movements, as well as to explain historical events and cultural phenomena. However, it has also been criticized for its complexity and for the potential for manipulation inherent in its emphasis on conflict and resolution, end quote. Okay, not bad. I would say that answer represents a pretty fair description overall, and it just might pass as something coming from an undergraduate in philosophy who was studying Hegel. And this is what's getting everyone's attention. The ChatGPT program may have achieved and passed some level of the Turing test. However, if this was a PhD program in philosophy, one might pick apart the response regarding the Hegelian dialectic. First and foremost is the use of the term thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. As we often discuss in the Hegel study group on Facebook, Hegel never used those terms, and they really don't reflect what Hegel has in mind in his dialectical approach. Sublation is an important part of this, which is not addressed here, and it is unclear to me just what is meant by the potential for manipulation inherent in its emphasis on conflict and resolution. For more on sublation and Hegel's dialectical process, please see episode 36 of the Cunning of Geist podcast. Now, many others have tested ChatGPT system and also found it wanting. The Washington Post newspaper, for example, had 10 writers pose nearly 50 questions to the program, and they found about 1 in 10, about 10%, were off base or flatly inaccurate. They noted in the article that the biggest problem was that ChatGPT presents its answer in a definitive style, even when it's completely inaccurate. And many have pointed out that ChatGPT also produces phony references. For example, Nassim Taleb on Twitter pointed out that he asked ChatGPT a question and it provided a reference as part of the answer. It cited a journal, the year, the author, etc. But when he put that reference back into ChatGPT as a question, it said that reference did not exist. So obviously, ChatGPT needs some work. But many feel a new ability has been formed, which can be honed, that will allow the software to comb the hive mind of all of humanity and be able to provide direct and meaningful answers to any type of question, and also to do much of the work that is now being done by humans. Some are using it on their jobs even now. My son, for example, is a middle school teacher, and he told me he used it to help him develop a lesson plan in just a few minutes, which otherwise would have taken him much longer. I want to discuss next for a moment how ChatGPT might do what it does. It obviously devours reams of data from all over the internet and books, and the programmers have figured out how to condense this information into a conversational style, as we've seen. Now, I have no idea how this actually works. However, I did spend my professional career in the field of market research, and we used a statistical tool called factor analysis. It allowed one to take a large amount of data and find similarities of data points to other data points. This allows the computer to reduce the amount of data down to a smaller number of factors. For example, one could enter in thousands of bits of data, say how people responded to questionnaires, both open and closed-end questions, and then the statistical tool would boil it down to a specific number of factors. There could be 5 main factors or 20 or more, depending on the researcher, and also there are statistical tools to help make that decision of how many factors are best to use. So in scouring the internet, ChatGPT may do something similar in reducing large amounts of data down to several factors. In the Hegelian dialectic, for example, it may have found thesis, antithesis, synthesis was used most often to describe dialectics and built its response around that. And that's why you may not be able to trust it entirely, because it's just picking up what's out there. And if what's out there is wrong, then ChatGPT is going to be wrong. And factors themselves can be used to segment the data. For example, there may be certain groups where some factors are most important and different groups where other factors are more important. Take the political arena, conservatives versus liberals. These are two clusters of individuals, and there's a tool called cluster analysis that identifies different groups, how they respond differently to the factors. So the factors are used to create different clusters, and that allows you to understand the population even better. And it was interesting, this cluster analysis can even identify groups that have not yet been identified by the media, politicians, or anyone else, but they do exist nonetheless. The same can be done with words themselves and sentences. Certain underlying patterns of sentence construction can be found. And this can be used to construct new sentences that have meaning. And here's where it gets interesting. It may be that humans also rely on these underlying patterns of speech to express themselves. If you really think about it, much of what we think and say is repetitive. We use common sayings, common expressions, common emotions. Our brains may be similar in that we absorb much of what society has out there and we parrot it back. And this, I believe, is true to a large extent, but not completely. I believe there is also an intuitive, holistic way of thinking as well, what Hegel calls reasoning, or Vernunft in German. I've often referred to it here as right-brained reasoning as opposed to the common either-or thinking of the left brain. Our right brain can also perform pattern recognition and put concepts together in new ways to create new thoughts, new ideas. ChatGPT can only feed back to us what is out there. Yes, it can learn how we most often put concepts together to form new ones and mimic this process, but it cannot tell which combination will produce the eureka moment, as we humans can do. It may be able to predict it, but not replicate it. The true aha moment may be uniquely human. Essentially, I'm talking about intuitive creativity here, the idea, the new idea, the better idea. But we humans can go a bit further than just putting together different ideas. We can actually create ideas. This becomes very important in original music. Now, I'm sure artificial intelligence will be able to compose music someday. In fact, a lot of music today sounds like it comes from a robot. But that aside, I do not believe a computer will ever be able to compose one of several Bob Dylan songs, for example, or create something like Don McLean's big hit American Pie. There's so much nuance and history and double meanings in those words of those songs that, to me at least, it would be impossible to produce these songs from a computer program. And the same goes for musical composition as well. Popular music uses repetitive chord patterns, but as I said, it is Dylan's words that were his genius. But Beethoven's Ninth does not use repetitive chord patterns used thousands of times before. His Ninth Symphony was a unique, new, and original piece of music, and it stood the test of time. And there's also the performance aspect of music. The Rolling Stones produced great music. They wrote great, iconic songs. And they have an incredible songbook, but certainly part of their appeal is seeing Mick Jagger and Keith Richards on the stage. And with some artists, such as megastar today, Taylor Swift, how she looks and appears on stage may be more the driver of her success than the music. At most, AI-generated music would be a DJ, a disc jockey. As human beings, we are in living, breathing bodies, and it is important for us to interact with other living, breathing bodies. That is part of the musical experience. Music operates on a deep emotional and physical level that is grounding and binds us with others, often spiritually. That is why music is so important in religious services of all kinds. Interestingly, one of the original streaming music platforms tried to take the core elements of the music based on songs a listener had previously selected and liked, and it produced a channel of music just for them, based on an algorithm formed from what they had previously liked, through a kind of factor analysis. But it was a failure. Music is always the whole and not the parts. It's not built up from the bottom, from factor analysis, but it's an interplay from top down and the bottom up. Music itself is often heralded as spiritual, something on a different dimension. Kurt Vonnegut said, music is what convinced him that there is a God. Let me quote him, quote, "If I should ever die, God forbid, let this be my epitaph. The only proof he needed for the existence of God was music," end quote. Of course, a computer could generate millions of different melodies, but it would take a human to pick out the great one. The computer would not know. You may have heard the story of that given an infinite amount of time, a monkey typing on a keyboard would eventually type out all of Shakespeare's works. But again, the monkey would not know how or when this had been accomplished. Only the human being who knew Shakespeare's works would know this. Another interesting aspect of the AI revolution is the possibility of integrating personalities into the programs. We did the last episode on Jung's personality types. It is interesting to think that at some point using Jung's system, programmers could develop some 8 different personalities using the system I outlined in the last episode, or 16 different personality types as in Myers-Briggs. So this would at least give the program a personality to some degree. It could have a person choose one of several personalities to deal with in the ChatGPT and make it more human-like. Some could be more emotional, some could be more rational, and you'd end up with different characters, almost like the R2-D2 and C-3PO robots in the Star Wars movies, or HAL in 2001. But this discussion of personality brings me back to where I think AI can succeed and truly extend our capabilities and where it cannot. Marshall McLuhan said that all technologies are an extension of the human. All technologies are extensions of one of our senses or human processes. McLuhan himself was incredibly prescient about things to come with the electronic revolution, and I urge you to listen to episode 21 of this podcast where I discuss McLuhan. And the computer and ChatGPT are an extension of our thinking capabilities, and the computer revolution certainly helped our mental capabilities. Do children today even learn multiplication tables anymore with a calculator always by their side? And we have spell check, we have programs to analyze our grammar and even sentence construction. And the internet has made libraries essentially obsolete. So much is available just by the click of a mouse. And there's no doubt that AI and ChatGPT and its successors will dramatically enhance our logical capabilities as well. And it will certainly reduce the time it takes to perform many mental tasks. But rational logical thinking is only one of several key functions of being a live human being. Many traditions have identified four essential categories of human existence. Using Jung's system, they are physical, emotional, thought, and intuition. And we analyzed this in detail in the last episode, number 68. And as we've discussed here before, the Russian esotericist George Gurdjieff called them the four ways: the way of the faker, physical; the way of the priest, emotional; the way of the yogi, rational; and the way of the sly one, intuitive. We've also discussed how Gurdjieff used the horse-drawn carriage as an analogy to the human being, the carriage being the body, the horse, the emotions, the driver, the intellect, and the passenger, the master, if you will, is our inner soul, our intuition, our purpose. And for more on Gurdjieff and this analogy, please see episode 34. Regarding the physical function, technology has greatly enhanced our physical capabilities. Obviously, fire enabled us to keep warm and cook our food. The horse, then the automobile, then the plane, and the rocket ship allowed us to travel great distances, to fly, even to the moon. And unfortunately, technology has also dramatically increased our ability to kill others, to kill our fellow human beings by the hundreds of thousands. Regarding the emotions, we can connect with loved ones around the world through instant messaging and video FaceTiming, and we make friends and have communities on social media. We can even get dates and meet people through online dating services. And then there's the logical thinking, which I've discussed, the computer and how it has increased the abilities of our minds dramatically, and not just in computing power, but in information retrieval as well. But of the four functions, intuition is an entirely different thing. Here we get into purpose, into life itself, what drives us forward. We get into the collective unconscious. We get into spirituality. Now, certainly, as AI dips into the hive mind of all humanity, it could even develop maps of our collective unconscious, which we ourselves are often unaware. Now, I do believe that computers may be able to assist our inner selves, the master within, by understanding these undercurrents in the hive mind of humanity. By understanding these currents, we can gain new insight into ourselves and our motivations. It may help us decide what is not really unique, new, or innovative in our goals, and when we are in fact following just a script. This is the great benefit of AI to me. But here is the difference. The collective unconscious is a living thing inside each of us. It is the spirit of memory that lives within us all, that we can assimilate this to a greater or lesser extent as we live our lives. Now, the computer could certainly simulate this process, this intuitive process, by analyzing current events and comparing it to the hive mind of all information and coming up with new factors. But again, it would be acting mechanically through its own program, and it may miss key contextual components. But even if it could keep up to date and integrate new data, how would it know what to do with this information? And here's a very key point. We ourselves as a species do not have a clear idea of purpose that we all agree to across the planet. we're not all on the same page as to what our purpose is here, or if even if there is a purpose. Spirit Geist is coming to know itself through our experience here, as I believe and as Hegel taught. It is alive. It is the most alive part of us. And we fight and argue, and history unfolds slowly for the greater benefit of all. But the computer does not have the silent partner. It has to have it programmed in. But who is doing the programming? What is their objective? And this is where the rub comes in. Can we trust the leaders of Google to figure this out for us? I don't believe we can or should. Either does Elon Musk. And just one more point on sublation, which is the, as I've called it, the driving wheel of Hegelian dialectics. I believe sublation relates directly to intuition. And please see episode 36 for more on Hegel's concept of sublation. Sublation is a living process in which an abstract notion and its negation are brought together to form a new concept, lifted up to a higher level. And the key is that this process is not formulaic. It's not just averaging black and white to produce gray. It is a holistic process, one that corresponds more to big picture thinking of the right brain than the discursive either-or symbolic logic of the left brain. Hegel called this Vernunft, or reasoning, as being distinct from Verstand, or the common understanding. As we discussed in the previous episode, this is what separates intuition from common judgment. And while ChatGPT might be able to model the intuitive part to some extent, I do not believe it will ever completely be able to duplicate this process for the reasons I have stated. Using the horse-drawn carriage analogy of Gurdjieff's, the human being operates as one entity, an integrated unity, composed of four parts. The driver of the carriage may rely on Waze or Google Maps and other devices to steer the horses, and perhaps the driver can use computers to actually improve communication with the horses. But somebody must hold the reins, a living person. And the computer may simulate different objectives, different places to go, but the real direction and goal of the horse-drawn carriage must come from the passenger, not from the driver with a supercomputer. Again, it is the passenger in the carriage, our inner being, our spirit, our conscience, our life, our vitality, that gives us the purpose. This cannot be relegated to a computer. And this brings me to the last topic I'd like to discuss, that of self-consciousness. And this is where a computer simulation cannot compete with a real-life human being, in my view. As all Hegel students are aware, Hegel shows in his Phenomenology of Spirit that self-consciousness only comes about when a consciousness is confronted with another consciousness. There can be no conception of me as self without another me to compare. Now, this sense of personal identity being a self can only come about when confronted with another. And I'm not sure how a computer could ever achieve this. I guess you could have two ChatGPT computers talk to each other, but again, they would only be blindly following their programming. They could fight each other for recognition, but again, this would be a pre-programmed match. It wouldn't be a living, breathing match as in the master-slave dialectic that follows the self-consciousness section in the Phenomenology of Spirit. In the master-slave dialectic, there is a fight to the death, and one gives up before either dies. The master is willing to die for recognition, but not the slave. How could this ever be programmed into a computer that was real? Again, you could simulate this. It would be like fake wrestling on TV, but it would not be real. We are social beings. We have evolved from animals that are social beings. It is this living part that cannot be replicated exactly. Now, just some final thoughts. There is a notion of qualia that we have discussed here before. The term was coined by the American pragmatic philosopher Charles Peirce. It refers to our actual experience of perception, as in seeing the color red. The computer will never see the color red. It will be able to identify the vibratory frequency of the color red and distinguish it from other colors, but it will never actually see red like we do. The computer will never actually hear a musical note. Again, it can tell the vibratory frequency of that note being played and call it that's a C or that's a or A flat, but it will never hear the note. Qualia is what separates the human from the machine. And for more information on qualia, please see episode 45. One final point. In the question I asked ChatGPT about the Hegelian dialectic, it said, quote, "It has also been criticized for the potential for manipulation inherent in its emphasis on conflict and resolution," end quote. Manipulation. Another point. A Hegel study group member recently asked ChatGPT, what the reasons are to both study Hegel and not to study Hegel. One of the reasons given back to not study Hegel was as follows, quote, Hegel's ideas have been associated with authoritative political regimes such as the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany. While Hegel himself was not a supporter of these regimes, some may feel uncomfortable in studying his work in light of this association, end quote. Now, I have a major problem with this portrayal of Hegel. Both the manipulation comment in the first quote and the association with Hitler in the second response. These are the kind of claims that take a life of their own in the public's consciousness, and they stick. People are not going to take the time to study Hegel to see if this is true or not. I often get feedback when I post about Hegel in different forums. Some troll will oh, he, you know, that's where the Nazis got all their idea, some such nonsense. This stuff is very damaging, and it shows the problems with just how things are programmed and what comes out. Without supervision, AI could control the narrative and create the world it wants. It would be the programmers themselves, however, who are setting this agenda, not the computer. And this is where the danger lies. This is why we need some oversight and why we need an on-off switch. And we need to discuss this as a human project. However, on the other side, by presenting us with what is essentially mechanical thinking, finite mechanical thinking, AI can show us how much of our lives are purely mechanical. And this can enable us to be more creative in our own lives and the lives of others. So there is promise here. So to summarize, I do believe that artificial intelligence is on the brink of a major revolution that will certainly benefit the world. However, the way I see it, as McLuhan did, AI is just an extension of our own minds. I do not see a risk of it taking over the world or destroying humanity, as some fear, for the reasons stated. However, people using AI may try to do just that, and for that, we have to be on guard. I also do not see artificial intelligence achieving true sentience or self-consciousness as a human being, as for the reasons discussed. It may come close, and it may be indistinguishable from a human, as in the Turing test, but again, it is just a simulation, just a program. At its best, AI will be a remarkable tool for the driver of the carriage, but it will always be the passenger in the carriage, the live passenger in the carriage that is calling the shots. And lastly, one further point. I realize this is a fast-breaking development in the history of humankind. And as more is found out, as more becomes available, I myself will remain open to modify some or all of what I've said here. But this is where I stand now, and I believe my essential points made here will stand the test of time. So, that's a wrap for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I will be posting references at the podcast Facebook page in a day or two, at Cunning of Geist. And please like and follow that page, because I often post there in between episodes. We get very interesting comments there as well. You can participate in the discussion of what we discuss here in the episodes. You can also follow me on Twitter, at Cunning of Geist. And please tell your like-minded friends about the podcast. Help spread the word. Thanks for joining me once again. And as always, this is Gregory Novak. This is the Cunning of Geist. See you next time.